Welcome to The Sounds of Sand, a podcast inquiring into the beauty and mystery of existence beyond ultimate truths. Welcome back to The Sounds of Sand podcast. Today we have an extraordinary guest, Reverend Deborah L. Johnson, or Rev D as she is known, who's a figure whose impact spans across the realms of spirituality, civil rights, and corporate leadership. With a rich background that includes pivotal roles in the landmark civil rights cases and a broad influence in the sectors ranging from tech giants like Apple and Hewlett-Packard to nonprofits and healthcare organizations. Her work, recognized by numerous Lifetime Achievement Awards, has left an indelible mark on public accommodations and domestic partnership rights in California, showcasing her deep commitment to justice and equality. She's the founder of the Inner Light Ministries and a key figure in the cross-cultural relations and spiritual guidance. And Rev D has dedicated her life to fostering understanding the unity across diverse communities. She holds a degree from UCS and UCLA alongside a ministerial degree and an honorary doctorate of divinity. Rev D's academic and spiritual pursuits reflect her multifaceted approach to leadership and service. And today we explore life in our post-pandemic world, how to navigate the polycrisis with engaged activism and spiritual practice, how to live from a place of hope, an acronym that she'll talk about. And we talk about two upcoming courses that Reverend Johnson is offering called Yes to Oneness and How to Depolarize. And you can find links about those courses in the show notes. And now on to the show. Okay, I'm here with Reverend Deborah Johnson, also known as Rev D. Thank you so much for being on the podcast with us.
My pleasure, for sure.
Yeah, how have you been?
You know, I've been great. I really have. You know, these are some interesting times, and I think we are here literally for such a time as this. So I'm excited.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I think the last time you connected with Sand was during the pandemic. We had this Wisdom in the Times of Crisis summit. And you gave this really powerful, beautiful talk, Why Waste a Good Crisis?
For sure. Yeah. Yes, why waste a good crisis? You know, things happen and they give us opportunities to see from different perspectives, to create a new narrative so we can have a different experience. And why go through something as big as that and come out on the other side the same?
Right. Yeah. Yeah, we had this kind of quest of like, we got to get back to normal. We got to get back to normal. But I think pretty much everyone saw it as a time of transformation, as a time of like, there is no going back to normal. And what was normal wasn't that normal.
Yeah. And even if it was normal, it's just against nature to go back. Mm-hmm. Nature never goes back. It always moves forward. So the spring is not mourning the leaves that it lost in the fall. It creates new leaves. It'll never be the exact same tree twice. The universe never recreates the exact same thing twice. There's always this natural evolution. And I think that's where we get stuck. We're certainly stuck there politically now in trying to recreate someplace we think we've already been as opposed to moving forward to where life is calling us now.
Right. I think I've seen that on some red baseball hats, if I'm not mistaken.
Just saying.
To that effect. Yeah. And I think one of the beautiful things, I've been listening to a lot of your talks over the past week, and is the way that you talk about hope and frame the energy of hope.
Yes.
And so my first question is, how do we keep hope alive in such divisive times?
You know, there's an acronym for hope. Heart open, possibility, and engagement. Those are the three things we need to have hope, to keep hope, to regain hope, to keep our hearts open, to stay in possibility consciousness, no matter what it is that's going on, to never let it have the last word, and to stay engaged, not withdraw, run away, acquiesce, but to continue on, much like I was just saying about nature, how nature is always moving on to whatever it is that's next.
Mm-hmm. I love that. So it's heart open, possibility, and engagement.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if you think about it, whenever we lose hope, it's because we've decreased at least one of those. Mm-hmm. Two is even worse. Three is deadly. If you close your heart, don't see possibility, and completely disengage, oh, life looks like a really dark, dark place for you then.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's sort of the definition of this divisiveness, this sort of us and them mentality. It's like, I've closed my heart. I don't see any possibility, and I don't care. I'm just completely stuck in what I believe is right.
Yeah. And the interesting thing about that is that all of those are on us. Mm. See, hope is an inside job.
Right.
It isn't the outer circumstances that give us hope, because our experience isn't actually what's going on. It's our narrative about it. It's how we name it, what it is that we say about it. The divisiveness that you were just talking about is not a matter of the circumstances and the conditions. Differences, divisiveness, that's conflict doesn't come from that. The conflict is the polarization around the differences. That's the conflict. The divide is not the substance of what's going on. The divide is that place in us, the shutdown, the disengagement, the polarization, the not seeing beyond it. And as long as we're looking at trying to change the outer things as the solution, it's only half the story.
Yeah. And it's, you know, it makes me wonder too about, because we talk about non-duality, obviously science and non-duality. And I love the way, and you gave a SAN talk, I think it was like 2018 or 2017, about non-duality, but very much about the sort of social aspects of yes. non-duality and how do we actually feel it in the heart, you know? And so I was wondering if you could talk a bit about that.
Yes, certainly. I actually have two workshops that are going to be coming up in a couple of weeks that are both taking a look at this just from slightly different perspectives. You know, non-duality isn't just a concept. It's not something that we just come to conferences about or listen to podcasts about and like pontificate about its merits. Mm-hmm. Everything is energy, including us. We are energetic frequencies. We are energetic beings. And non-duality is a frequency. It's not just a concept. And if we want it as our lived experience, we have to recalibrate to that frequency. I believe the talk that you were mentioning that I did, I think that one was in 2018. One of the subtitles of that was something like, you know, what if I don't want to be one with them? Mm-hmm. The inconvenient truth of non-duality. So we find ourselves at this crossroad.
Right.
We really do. And this crossroad is, do we believe what we say we believe? Do we actually believe it? Because if we actually believe it, that means that we have to literally recalibrate. We have to shift our energetic vibration to one of non-duality. we have it as an intellectual concept, but then in our heart space and our actions and our attitudes, we're living in dualism. Mm-hmm. So my upcoming workshops are really about how do we move beyond that? Mm-hmm. How do we move beyond that? The how to depolarize workshop is taking a look at what are those concrete steps? What are those actions? Once the duality, the divisiveness, the polarization has taken root, what is it that we do? I've been a consultant and a trainer in the field of diversity, literally, you know, like all my life. And DEI has been one of my big fields. And I'm going to be bringing in a lot of best practices and models and curriculum and things I'm developed, including a new model I recently presented at Harvard Divinity School, where we start to take a look at how do we work at the intersectionality of the way that the material world manifests? How do we bring it all together? How do we bring in the fact that there is oneness? We have diversity and a personal individualized experience as well. Okay. So I'm going to be bringing in things about power dynamics and how do we do hierarchy and how do we get away from the otherness. Then I have another workshop called Yes to Oneness, which goes a little bit deeper down to the roots of it. Okay. How do we get there in consciousness? What is this dualistic thinking? How are we contributing to it? And how can we actually vibrate on that frequency of the oneness so that we're not becoming part of the problem in the first place? They're both really good and potent. The Yes to Oneness is going to take us a deep dive into consciousness. Mm-hmm. And the How to Depolarize is going to give us some tools and flex some muscle in what do we do now? And this is good for anything, whether it's in our personal life, our professional life, our political life. It's the same principles. Same principles.
Hmm. Wow, they sound beautiful. It sounds very complementary too.
Oh, like yes. They definitely go together.
Yeah, because one of the things we at SAND we've been sort of struggling with over the last few years, especially as these polycrises are, you know, evolving and spiraling, is like, yeah, you can spend time in the consciousness of I am one, you know, and meditate and stay within that sort of bubble of transcendence, but you have to go deeper. You know, the real non-duality is about going deeper and
exactly,
yeah, reaching out to people that seem like they're the other, you know, and getting into all of the, whether it, like you said, it's in the personal or the social or political, that, you know, this work. And it sounds like that's what, how to depolarize, that's what that gets into.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. It's very hands-on. It's very experiential. It's extremely pragmatic and using proven tools and, you know, the things that work. And it really requires us to be willing to move out of our comfort zone. Mm-hmm. You know, and the thing is that I contend that we are at a point right now where, you know, you see those fireboxes, like in case of emergency, break glass. Yeah. this is a break glass moment.
Right.
We just do not have the luxury to snooze through the news. We do not have the luxury to just sit by,
right,
and acquiesce that there's something that's going on. And we have to literally infuse the collective energy and vibrational field with hope, with possibility, with harmony and civility. Those things just, they're not going to just fall from the sky. We have to activate them. They're already here. It's kind of like music is everywhere, but you have to activate it, you know, sing. We are instruments, you know, use an instrument, play. Then you can hear it. Then you can experience it. It isn't that the music isn't there, but we won't experience it till we activate it. Well, it's the same thing. The harmony, the peace, it's all there, but we're not activating it.
Right.
And it's really, really, really important that we do that. I have the privilege of being one of the Sound's true authors. And I have this series called Letters from the Infinite, where I just get these beautiful, beautiful downloads. And there's two volumes. The first volume is called The Sacred Yes. The second volume is called Your Deepest Intent. And in that workshop, Yes to Oneness, where we're doing the deep spiritual dive, we're going to be using those as some materials to guide us and to direct us. But once again, it's hands-on stuff. It's not just, oh, we're going to sit around and talk about it. It's take deep looks at ourselves and what is it that we need to do.
Love it. Yeah, because it's like if you don't have the sort of spiritual work, the like you said, letters from the infinite. I love that. So it's like if you don't have that connection to the infinite, I think it's, in my experience, it's very easy to get burned out, you know, because it's overwhelming to see the news and to, you know, even if you're doing the social justice work and the activism, it's very easy to get burned out when you don't have that connection to the divine or the infinite or whatever you want to call it.
Exactly. You know, and it doesn't mean that somebody has to believe in a deity. It isn't so much a theological perspective, but anybody who has hope believes in something. they believe in something. They believe in life. They believe in love. They believe in nature. Yeah. And I don't care. You know, it doesn't matter to me what that is that you feel is eternal or what that is that you feel is I use the word sacred, you know, above and beyond just whatever it is that's in the material world that brings a sense of reverence to you. But everybody has something. And my message right now is go there. Okay, anchor in that. Because that thing that brings us hope is not temporal. Okay, it's not transitory. It's not based upon the drama du jour, or, you know, or whatever is going on right today. And each of us, particularly right now, needs to anchor in that. You know, for some people, it'll be a sense of the past. You hear people talk about like calling in the spirit of the ancestors or looking at the deep places that we've evolved from. For other people, it's a sense of the future calling. You know, what is the legacy that we're leaving? What do we tell the great-great-grandchildren about what did we do, you know, in this moment and a sense of ourselves as being part of a chain of life that's part of a larger motion. However you frame it, just get there. Come to the party because we need you as your highest and best self right now. And I'm not just, I know I'm laughing, but I'm not joking when I say that we cannot afford at this particular time to acquiesce to doom and to gloom and to divisiveness. Not on our watch. No.
And I love this metaphor you used a few minutes ago of everything's vibration and everything is music. And it's just about sort of channeling that, which is already present. You know, it's like, you think about a piano, it's just, it's the strings are sitting there, you know, and the music's all in there. The vibration is there. It's just waiting to be played, to be plucked out.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Sometimes I'll use the phrase, we are verbs. Mm. Okay. We're not just nouns. We're not just entities that life is happening at or to us. We're frequencies. The activity is happening in us, through us, as us. We literally are it. We're it.
Yeah. Yeah, and the two of the letters in the acronym of HOPE are possibility, which feels very active to me. It's like not settling for some specific goal or some state, but the constant revealing of what is possible and being open to that. You know, like you said, the pandemic, we thought, okay, we're going to go back to the way it was in 2019, you know, and it wasn't like that. You know, we're in a completely different phase now of humanity, I think.
Exactly. Possibility is the way that nature works. Mm-hmm. Like, what's next? Next speaks to possibility. So I've lived my life in California, mm-hmm. which has been known for fires in particular, for the mudslides, the... You know, the rains, you know, the earthquakes. And every time, in fact, I thought this is just so incredible. There are some seeds in the forest in the Santa Cruz area where I've been for the past few decades, these huge, huge redwoods. And the fires have come in almost every single year. And yet there are seeds that are so far down in the earth that the only way that they get activated is through the heat of the fires. Mm-hmm. So nature has its own built-in way of restoring itself. So it's all crispy, toasty, burnt. And then the next year you start to see a little green. And the next year you start to see a little green. And it's the most amazing thing to me to have these big redwood trees that are so big that they're hollowed out and charred in the middle. And you can actually get inside of them. I mean, like they're that big. And yet the charred tree is still growing. Mm-hmm. And I keep coming back to nature because I feel like everything we ever needed to know is in nature. Nature doesn't try to do the exact same thing. Every sunset is going to be different. Every dawn, no two snowflakes are the same. Everybody's baby fingerprint. You could be a twin, but you've got your own baby fingerprint. Mm-hmm. And if we stop trying to just be what we were, and if it's to continue, it will continue, but fresh and new. Mm-hmm. If the tree's going to get leaves again, it'll have new leaves. Mm-hmm. And that's how it is with us right now, where, yeah, you know, there may be a little pruning that goes that goes on in our lives individually and collectively, but it comes back. Mm-hmm. It comes back. Now, I do want to say this, though. That's good news and it's bad news, okay? That idea of like history repeats itself. Mm-hmm. Well, there is this repetitive motion that happens where it may not be exactly the same, but that same imprint, that same vibration, it's going to come back again. So what I contend is that things like divisiveness, the isms, you know, racism, sexism, and all that. Because everything is energy, we can't wipe it away, but we can archive it. You know, it can get way, 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 way back there so that it's not trending. And we need to stop trending on the stuff that we don't want to experience. Let's keep our mind and our consciousness. I like to say pain pushes until vision pulls, so that we're not just talking about what we don't want. We're talking about creating what we do want. Mm-hmm. And that's where I'm trying to go now, is how do we get there? How do we have the harmony, the civility? How do we have the equanimity, the sense of the non-duality? It's possible, but we have to believe it. We have to want it, and we have to be it.
Well, I wanted to ask, because you're talking about non-duality, mm-hmm. And your title, Reverend, that's so that's in a Christian faith, right?
Well, I'm more of an interfaith.
That's what I was going to ask about, your work as an interfaith, yeah.
Yeah, and to be honest with you, we refer to it as omnifaith, mm-hmm. Because it's not even just about particular religions. For some people, nature, you know, is their religion or life, so to speak. Mm-hmm. It's about the sacred for me. It's about that sense of being part of a sacred interconnectedness of all life. There are universal spiritual principles that you can't patent. Nobody has a monopoly. They're everywhere present through all societies, you know, in all cultures. And that's the place where my ministry stands. Mm-hmm. So some people say, well, that sounds very Buddhist. I'm saying, well, yeah, it is. Well, that reminds me of what we did in the Jewish holiday. Yeah, well, you probably did. And I tell people all the time, if you are in any kind of tradition and it doesn't sound like anybody else, you need to run. You need to run, because underneath it all, there'll be this common thread.
Okay.
This common thread, yes.
Right. So look for the places in our religion, our spiritual practices, our sacred practices that feel universal, and that's more towards the truth, you think?
Yeah, well, there are these four things that all the spiritual traditions have in common. One, that there's some kind of energy, intelligence, like something creates and sort of organizes and run things, so to speak. Mm-hmm. Two, that humanity is somehow part of that. There's some kind of intrinsic relationship between humanity and creative energy itself. Mm-hmm. That three, the whole purpose of human existence is to discover that relationship, to honor it and discover it. And last but not least, they all have some kind of understanding of karmic effect, that you reap what you sow, what you put out comes back, that there's cause and effect, that there's a way that we are co-creative in this universe by the things that we do. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hmm. And nice. That they all have that in common with this belief that if you get into alignment with all of that, it gives you a resilience. Hmm. It doesn't promise that nothing will ever happen to you, but essentially, it promises hope, if we want to put it that way, that the heart open, the possibility, the engagement, that you will make it, you will survive, regardless if there's a Holocaust or slavery or incarceration, abuse, that there's something within us that is so precious and our connection to whatever this creative energy is, that it is transcendent. Hmm. of all of the stuff that's going on in the world.
Yeah.
And it is our right to live that, to be that, even in the midst of the circumstance, in the midst of the war, you know, in the midst of the genocide. Like, don't lose that spark of our humanity that's actually bigger than being human.
Right. Yeah. I mean, we see that, you know, often it's the poor and the oppressed who look, turn towards religion and spiritual practice to get them through that, because they maybe sense that imbalance of that, you know, there has to be something that's going to get me through that, that's not material and physical, because my material and physical life is so harsh.
Yeah, I would say that. And I think that it's also true looking at it from the other end,
exactly,
which is that the more industrialized that we get and the more puffed up we get, so to speak, with as human beings, with our own sense of power and might, the further away we get.
Yep.
The further away we get of our understanding of the oneness. So we can be one of the richest, most technologically advanced societies on the planet with the highest gun violence, suicides, you know, and all of these other things, because we're not dealing with our soul essence being so caught up in the control and what it is that we think, you know, that we know.
Yeah.
So we have to be more deliberate, I guess is the word that I'm using. When you're away from the land, when you are, trapped up in a lot of tech and misinformation and things that are like vying for your attention to control your behavior or to push your consumer patterns. But we have to be a lot more deliberate. You know, when we're just, you know, that feeling like if you're on vacation in the tropics or something and you're out there with nature and the sun and the wind and the surf coming, you know, in and out, and not so stressed. Sometimes it's a little easier for us to feel that sense of connection. It's always there. It's always there, but we have to be deliberate about it.
So cultivate the intention to get reconnected with what we actually are, which is nature. We are nature. You know, we just have paved it over with concrete and
bingo.
Smartphones.
Bingo, exactly. That it's already who we are.
Yeah.
It isn't so much that we have to chase after it, is we have to peel the other stuff off.
Right.
That's camouflaging it.
Yeah.
It's like coats of armor over our heart.
Right. Yeah, because, you know, you're talking about, with these workshops and your work, you're talking about sort of getting back to a natural state, a state that we know that we are, whether we look at that from the spiritual lens or from the we are the planet, we are nature lens.
Yes.
It's really a return. It's like a recovery movement almost.
You are absolutely 1,000% correct. Okay. It is a return back to our more original vibration. Okay. It's not a return back to any particular outer expression, like the way that we were doing it, but the essence of who we are. That essence, like there's light. There's a way you express life at 5, at 25, you know, at 65, you know, and at 65, you don't have to try to be 25. And at 25, you don't have to be five. But there is a way at every stage of your life for life to express itself the most fully as you. As you.
Yeah, it sounds like authenticity, right? Like we know that feeling when we're being authentic, when we're like, we've dropped the mask, we've dropped the stories, and we're just direct with someone, or we're just ourselves, yes. You know?
Exactly.
And so we know that feeling internally. So it's like, we just need to return to that in a more holistic way, let's say, as a society.
Exactly. In essence, we already have it. Literally, your talent, your power, your creativity, your love, it's already here. Okay, so I'm come from a long line of educators, and I used to always think of education as like putting information in people's heads, but it comes from the Latin word educare, to bring forth out of. Mm-hmm. You know, when it educates, you bring forth out of. So let's just say I'm a art teacher or I'm a music teacher, but I can't give you my talent or my skill. Mm-hmm. The only thing I can do is help you activate the talent within you. Mm. You know, I can't give you, you can't use my love. Mm. The only thing I can do is help you to activate the love that's within you. Mm-hmm. It's like all the power, all of the everything we will ever have is already in there. It doesn't come from someplace else. I've been doing work inside men's prisons for over 20 years. And it's work that I've really, really, really grown to love. And that experience has really, really solidified for me everything that I'm saying. To watch people figure it out on the inside. You know, particularly the lifers. And then, you know, to watch them eventually get out and to still have relationships with them where it was never outside of themselves. And to find it in themselves, incarcerated, because it never was anyplace else. Mm-hmm. It's always within us. It's just, what will it take to give ourselves permission to find it? Mm. You know, when will we stop thinking somebody else has it? Mm-hmm. Or somebody else has eclipsed mine, taken it from me or us? I don't care what has happened. There is a place within you that is transcendent. All healing, this is all healing ever is. You can't unring the bell. We just change our mind about what we think that it means.
Beautiful. A nice use of the verb eclipsing too on this day.
I know. I've been thinking that the whole time. The big eclipse today. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, this definition, I've never heard this before, of education, of the bringing forth. I love that. Mm-hmm. I like the term facilitator too, when that's used as an educator, because it's like, you're not bestowing something into someone else. You're just kind of facilitating. You're just kind of making it easier, showing, hey, there's this path down here. I went down it once. Do you want to go down and check it out?
You know. Yeah. And you know, there's this interesting thing about truth. Mm-hmm. You notice when you hear something that you know is true, you feel it in your heart.
Yeah.
Not so much in your intellect. Mm-hmm. There's something, it's like it strikes a chord of remembrance. And you, something goes, oh, yeah. It's like it lands, it has a place to land within you. Like, oh, yeah. Like, mm-hmm. something within me knew that already. I just hadn't quite put my finger on it. When that truth really, whatever it is, a personal truth, a truth about athletics or music, like any kind of truth, mm-hmm. when it hits you, there's a feeling of it being old, not new.
Right.
Feeling of remembrance and resonance. Like, yes, 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 yes. It's in there. And that's what I'm talking about when I'm saying this place within us. It's that it's there, and the peace that we're looking for, the joy that we're looking for, the connection, we're not going to find it unless we activate it and stimulate it within us. If you're sour and grumpy and just feeling all mean, the music around you will just sound like noise. Mm-hmm. If your heart is shut down, it doesn't matter how much love is coming towards you. If you don't meet it, you won't feel it. Mm. Just like with the music, if you don't come to the music with a little bit of like rhythm and harmony and openness and, you know, nodding and patting or, you know, like whatever that, like really feeling it.
Yeah.
You have to meet the music with the music in you.
Right.
You got to meet the love with the love in you.
Right.
And this is true for everything, that it isn't just something outside I try to get. I have to calibrate to that frequency to meet it, to experience it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it reminds me of, you know, the Sanskrit phrase namaste.
Yes.
Which is the light in me recognizes the light in you.
Exactly. You know, when we get really roused and inspired by, you know, a great speaker. You know, I love listening to Martin Luther King Jr. You know, speeches. There's something about his voice, it just penetrates like every fiber of my being. And it calls us up. It's like it calls us out. It helps strike that accord. And then we start resonating with that. Mm-hmm. You know, not just their courage, but people who inspire us, inspired to breathe in. You know, it's like we're breathing it in. And then something taps within us that starts to release.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think right now where we are at this point, like in history, it is so important that we prioritize this, that it cannot be on the back burner, that for us to have fulfilling lives, personally, professionally, politically, in any area of our life, we have to be concerned about our frequency and our vibration. We have to live in that place of the hope, the heart open, possibility, and the engagement. We need all three. Mm. We need all three.
Right.
And there's enough out there to make us want to stop any one of those. disengage, you know, close our heart or not see any more possibility, resist that temptation and strive forward anyway.
Yeah. And do you have advice for people? Because I know that that's a common thing I hear is burnout and disengagement. So, you know, looking at videos at Gaza, for example, you know, it's so overwhelming and so unbelievably horrific that there's just a tendency in us to just say, well, you know, and we maybe create stories and we say, well, it's always been like this. I can't do anything about it. It's out of my control. You know, let me just shut it out and forget about it.
Right.
Like, how do we deal with that when those thoughts come up?
There's that place within us. There's something within us that believes in something. That believes in life, that has hope. And it's activated in each of us in different ways. Some people find it through artistic expression. Some people do it through movement. Mm. Some people maybe through cooking, caring for kids, looking at stars, sunsets. Mm-hmm. It's that place where it kind of almost like time stands still.
Right.
When you're, I call it the zone. Mm-hmm. When you're in the zone, nothing around you has the center of your attention except the sort of awe or whatever of the moment. Some people garden.
Right.
Go there. Do that. I just got off a flight yesterday. And you know that announcement that they always make, like before you help other people, like put your own mask on first.
Right.
And that's the problem. Okay. Is that we look out at the other world and we're like, and we're trying to try help other people because we can't, you know, breathe first. Get your own mask on first. And inevitably, I've been a spiritual counselor for decades. Inevitably, when I have these conversations with people about the despair, and then I ask them, and I'm not just talking about like your happy place, but some people might describe it at that, but I'm talking about that place where you're really feeling connected and like re-energized. Mm. And when they're giving me their woe stories, and then I ask them, well, what is that that makes you feel connected? Mm. And my next question is, are you doing that? And the answer is invariably no. I said, well, before you can figure out all what else you need to be doing in the outer world to make a difference in all of the rest of that, you won't be able to do it until you get your balance back, so to speak, your place of center. And that's an inside job. You're not going to find that in the news. Mm-hmm. You can't find that in conversations with other people or in history books. You. And it's a renewal. Mm. Just like eating. Okay. Your body doesn't want to hear about what you ate last month. What have you done for me lately? Okay. Every day, it needs some kind of nurturance and sustenance. Well, that's the same thing with our sort of psycho-spiritual body. Mm-hmm. Every day, it needs its nutrition. Just like your body can't run on junk food, Your psycho-spiritual can't run on junk food. We have to feed it. So we wonder why we're depressed when we've been starving ourselves.
Yep.
Feed yourself.
Right, right. Yeah, so this sounds like a prescription for people that are maybe coming to the How to Depolarize workshop.
Oh, yes.
To nourish yourself with the, you know, whether it's, like you said, any kind of flow practice, which I love that framing, because, you know, hopefully everyone out there has something that yes. makes them feel in the flow, whether it's playing sports or, you know, yeah, like you said, music or prayer, meditation, yoga, all those type of things, something that makes you feel timeless. You
yes. know? Everybody really, has something.
Yeah.
And you got to couple it. So you get to that place of groundedness and then you go on with whatever else needs to be done and the other things that need to happen. The workshops that I'm about to be doing help us to move forward. They'll even encourage you. Once you start to see and you start to feel, you'll want to. Like, oh yeah, I want to be centered. You know, I want to be that grounded. I can see the possibilities, you know, again. And I really believe that if you are able to and, you know, have the time, even if you can't participate in real time, just the materials, the recordings, if right. you want to do it on your own self-study afterwards, that it will, in fact, be beneficial. Even better, if you can get some other people to do it with you. Many right. people are in study groups or they are in, you know, different kinds of communities. Because when you have some other people that you know that you can use as sort of accountability partners or jogging partners, with all of my materials, they're very interactive. It's not just information coming at you. There are practicums, experiences, and things for you to do in between the sessions. That's your time of really growth. We listen and we learn from each other. We're literally spiritual travelers together along the way.
Nice.
So I invite you, you know, in that journey, because I'm there growing and learning right alongside you as well.
Right. Nice. Yeah, no, totally. And that's something, you know, like I said, we're, as an organization, SAND has been grappling with the sort of the myth of individual awakening, and that there is such thing as individual awakening when, you know, the path of the Bodhisattva is the hope of the awakening of all beings, and yeah. the end of suffering for all beings.
Well, there's this way in which it's all true simultaneously. Mm-hmm. One of my upcoming workshops, How to Depolarize, really mm-hmm. talks about this. And this is part of a model that I just presented at Harvard Divinity, where in the manifest world, everything manifests at three layers. There's a way in which it's like all others. So let's just say we take music, for example. There's a way there's just music. Okay. Then there's a way in which it's like some and not like others. Well, you might have genres. This is classical, this is rock and roll or whatever. And then there's the one like no other, like the individual song. Okay. This is way like everything, us as human beings. There's ways in which we're like all other people, ways in which we're like some people, where we get identities and cultures and that kind of thing, and then ways in which we are like nobody else. Mm-hmm. And if we're ever really going to solve problems, we have to deal with them at the intersection of all three.
Mm. Yeah.
And most of the time we don't, okay? We get stuck on one or the other. We get stuck on the just, we're all alike and we're all same. And we can't take a look at what are these ways in which our life experiences may be very different from each other, you know, depending upon the ways in which society, you know, has created things, or we're stuck on just the individual or some other conversations. A lot of social justice work is just stuck on that second one, these ways in which we're like some and not like others. And like, that's it. And it can't see the ways in which we're all the same. Or, you know, and it's like, no. We have to. So my workshop is like, how, part of it is about like, how do we deal with all three of those simultaneously? And this is part of the problem we're having with almost anything, from immigration to reproductive choice. Like, there are real individual people. And you can't just put a broad swath of them and what they, and like, no. And where's the broader humanity of all of it? And when we really want to deal with it, we have to deal with that intersection. You mentioned earlier when you said about sometimes the more oppressed people are the ones who are really leaning into that spirituality. When you know it's not your own might, yeah, you have to do that. And and when you look at the peace laureates, for the most part, they are coming from oppressed traditions, our great leaders. And they're coming from those because they see what I'm talking about. They're not just standing in it for their own group. They're actually standing in it for the so-called oppressors as well. They're seeing this commonality, seeing the way we have differences, seeing the way things are playing out on an individual level, and calling us to the place where let's have the capacity to hold it all. To hold it all.
Beautiful. You're weaving a lot of wonderful energies, and I feel like this is a great, to be encapsulated in these two workshops. So we'll have links to these workshops in the show notes and over on the SAND site. So great. Yes to Oneness and How to Depolarize. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
For spending the time and reconnecting with SAND. It's been a few years and we're really happy to have you as a continued part of our community.
You know, and I honestly miss it. I honestly miss it. And I mean this when I say that SAND is one of my all-time favorite conferences. No. When we were able to do it in person, it was so special. Not just the presenters, but the connections. Just sitting at those tables, you know, outside at lunch and whatnot. It was always so good and so stimulating. So keep up the good work. Great interviewer.
Thanks.
Love your consciousness.
Thank you. You too. So much.
All right. You take care.
All right. Take care.
And thank you for listening to The Sounds of SAND. We invite you to explore more of our talks, dialogues, videos, articles, events, and offerings through our website, scienceandnonduality.com. If you've enjoyed this conversation, please consider becoming a member to access our massive library of SAND content, available exclusively to SAND members. And we would love it if you could leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Google, and Spotify. And share this episode with your family, friends, and all sentient beings. Be well.